Welcome to episode 5 of Logger. Today we have Jesse and Pekka on the phone. And they need no introductions because they've been on here before. Good show, you guys. The other two guys, I don't know what happened to them today. But I'm sure they'll be on again next time. And today we're going to start off with talking about Unreal Tournament 2007.
Yay! You guys, either of you play UT 2004 or 2003?
I think the last one I played was just Unreal Tournament. I'm not sure.
Did that have a Linux port?
Yes.
I think they did, yeah.
Yes, it did. Couldn't you play the original Unreal under Linux, too?
I have no idea. I didn't even really know about Linux when I played Unreal Tournament original.
Yeah, I had Unreal Tournament original running. That was when you had to do all this funky stuff to get the NVIDIA drivers into your system and make sure it was linking properly to the GLX, the NVIDIA's OpenGL, as opposed to, I think it was the Mesa or the standard OpenGL with the X386 project.
All right. So, Unreal Tournament 2007 is obviously a continuation of the series, and you can pretty much expect that they're going to keep it pretty much exactly how it was originally, upgrade the graphics, make a bunch of new levels, add some extra physics to it, you know, just tweak it, but keep all the stuff generally the same. So, but I haven't heard any official announcement on this, but I'm pretty sure there's going to be something Linux in there because, well, as history has told us, they're all about Linux.
Of course. Now, wait, wasn't there a version of Unreal? Was it Unreal 2? Recently released?
That came out in like 2000-something. It was a single player. Well, I think it did have multiplayer later, but I don't think it was on Linux.
Trying to think, there was Unreal. I thought you can get those. Maybe that's you have to use Trans Gaming or Wine to get those running.
Well, Unreal 2 got pretty bad reviews, so not many people play it.
So Unreal Tournament 2007 is probably going to be more of the same from UT 2004, 2003, and UT.
Yeah. Unreal was just like mostly single player. There was like a deathmatch, but it wasn't really about multiplayer.
Unreal Tournament. Oh, wait, I'm talking about Unreal Tournament. Yeah. Now, Unreal Tournament, I think it was the first one. Didn't they have a single-player practice mode where there was, like, 10 or 15 levels that you can play single-player against bots?
Well, all the ones had that.
All the ones have that.
Yeah. It's just boss, so.
It was kind of a cup, I think, that you had to win.
Have you played a lot of Unreal Tournament there, Jesse?
Yeah.
What about you, Pekka?
I've played it a bit back in the day.
So I remember playing. It'd be fun when like the first couple of months of playing, and then everybody else would get so much better than me, and you'd have people doing all sorts of crazy, funky stuff. And it just got to the point where you'd hop in and get killed, and hop in and get killed.
I know a lot about that.
You know a lot about headshots?
Headshot.
Yeah. Ludicrous.
Then you gotta do the shock combo with that shock rifle.
Yes.
Which is hard to do.
You sit there. I like being up on a high spot there and just watching somebody sneaking around and picking them off, you know, with the sniper rifle.
Unreal Tournament is not a sneaking game. It is a jumping around sporadically game.
I know, you learned that pretty fast. Do you know of anything that they have planned to enhance Unreal Tournament 2007 from its predecessors?
Well, I think they're going to do something really cool with vehicles, because with 2004 they added these really neat vehicles, and I can really see them going insane with that, in like adding mechs or something crazy. And of course it's going to have even more dynamic lighting. We need more dynamic lighting and soft shadowing.
There you go, and a higher cost video card. Now they don't have anything, any of those with the vehicles, and I'm not sure. I never played Halo because it doesn't run under Linux, and I don't have an Xbox. And do they have any of those first person shooter type games where you jump into a vehicle that flies?
Unreal Tournament had that.
Oh, it did.
Yeah, if you if you had 2004 and you played Onslaught, there was a bunch of vehicles. Like, there was a vehicle that could fly in a tank and, like, something that was like a Hummer, which spikes came out the side and you could decapitate people as you drove by them.
Oh, that's neat. Can you decapitate your teammates when you drove by them, too?
If team damage was on.
Oh, wow. That'd be cool to kind of, like, have something like Unreal Tournament cross with Descent, where you... actually, Free Space, where you could actually not just go in like that specific arena, but to fly out of the arena. I don't know. Now we're getting into a massive multiplayer online role.
They're going to try to do that with Star Trek Online, I think.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know. That would be... I don't know if we have the technology to do that yet, where you could just, like, fly out of an arena and cross space and go into another arena.
You mean, like, inter-server... transfer?
I don't know. Yeah, that would be something.
Like, I'm not going to go into the game lobby. I'm just going to fly to the end of the map and I'll be transported to the arena next to me.
That's it.
The server next to me.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, well, it works for the online role-playing games.
Yeah. But
I guess those games aren't really as real-time as a game like Unreal Tournament.
Well, isn't World of Warcraft real-time?
Yeah.
I guess it's sort of. I don't know.
But then you always hear about these horrible issues with lag.
Right. I think that would be the killer right there, is the lag. I mean, to have something like that.
You really can't have more than 150 ping on an Unreal Tournament server, or you're like, just gimped completely.
Unreal Tournament.
Which is probably one of the most fast-paced FPS games around.
So yeah.
Lag kills.
Has there been an update to the Quake series? I remember Quake 3 was...
They have 4 out now.
Quake Arena. Was that it, Quake Arena? Or was that
it was Quake 3 Arena.
Right.
It was sort of different from the rest of the series, since all the other games had a really big single player in it.
Right. And then...
Where 3 was just complete... It was like Unreal Tournament, completely online.
I've heard mixed things about Quake 4.
Yeah, well, C4 is bitter. He's just bitter.
Uh-huh.
I found single player to be alright, and multiplayer was pretty much sort of like comparing Unreal Tournament and Unreal Tournament 2003. It was like same thing, upgraded graphics.
Oh, okay. Because I downloaded that Super Gamer DVD that supposedly has the Unreal Quake 4 demo on it on a live Linux DVD, but I haven't had a chance to pop that in my system and play it yet. I haven't even burned it to a DVD yet.
Do you know if it's for Linux?
Quake 4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
All id games are.
Yeah, I think Quake 4, the big to-do about that was the Linux client was released the day... maybe it wasn't. I thought the Linux client was, like, released the day of or around the day that Quake 4 was released, but you had to download it off the client. 2 days after as a download.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, it wasn't made by id. It was made by Ravensoft, I think. Raven something.
What, Quake 4 or
yeah, Quake 4.
Quake 4, yeah.
I didn't pay too much attention to that. I mean, I'm interested in trying it out, but I don't know. I don't know. Been trying other things besides that right now.
C4, if you're listening, you're a bitter, bitter man towards Quake 4. Give it another chance into your life.
Now, on a similar vein as Unreal Tournament, there is another project out there called Alien Arena 2006, which is an online first-person tournament shooter type game. You can find it over there at redplanetarena.org, red.planetarena.org. And I grabbed the Linux version, and all I basically did was start it up and start playing around with it. They have a single-player mode on there where you could fight some bots, and I just wanted to try it out. I had some mouse issues, though, with it. For some reason, the mouse wasn't as responsive as I'd like it to be. And then it's been so long since I played one of those FPS games that I'm really out of step with the keyboard and mouse control.
Old man.
That's it. You know it. You got those people that have all their keyboards tricked out with all their little, you know, macros and everything, and I'm sitting there just trying to turn my guy all the way around when I should be pressing a different button, and I get picked off right away.
Yeah, I can realize that. I have family members who I've tried to, like, here, play this, and they end up walking straight into, like, a pit of lava or something.
Yeah. I mean, definitely those games, if you haven't played them in a while, you lose the touch. But it's probably like riding a bike that it's not that difficult to pick back up again.
Yeah, sort of. Like, you still got to get used to the mouse sensitivity and, you know, all the jumping and strafing, and you got to crouch before you jump, and you got to do all that timing stuff. But, yeah, you get the muscle reflex back eventually.
Yeah, and then I remember playing those games so much that when I'd leave, you could still see it when you're, like, you're walking down a hallway or something, and you see it in your head.
And you want to jump diagonally across the room to shoot them?
You're like walking, you come into your house and you hug the wall there and you peek around the corner with your pretend gun and you just turn around and blow everybody in the room away. And you get a little into it too much. You try and sleep at night and all you see is the corridor.
Daddy, what are you doing?
Yeah.
The kids are freaking out here. Like, die!
Everything becomes an FPS.
Yeah.
That you think about, well, this is how I'm going to get down to this other room on the other side of the building, and you picture it through the hallway, and it's like, people give you that strange look when you're walking by them, and you're just so engrossed. Yeah. The good old days of too much Doom.
Yeah.
Now, I can't wait till they have, fully immersed 3D. First-person shooter virtual reality games. I guess it would be a first-person shooter then.
They got those eyes that bypass the brain, go directly into the optic nerve.
That's it.
You heard about that, right? With the chick and the artificial eyes.
No, I haven't. I heard
some chick basically got cameras and she has no eyes, so they just stuck it directly into her brain and she can see flashes of lights now.
I don't know if I want them to replace my eyes with cameras, though.
Are you sure? Sounds pretty cool.
I don't know about that. Because, I don't know. That's one of those things where if something's working pretty good, it doesn't seem like a great idea to mess with that on some level.
But it's so cyberpunk, man.
Oh, I know.
Neuromancer.
I know, but, I mean, would you want to be the third or fourth person they do this on, and all you get is, like I don't know, it looks like an Atari 2600.
Well, I mean, once they get the final down, I'm not gonna. Well, maybe I'll do beta testing. Beta testing, wet mods.
Yeah, I don't know. Or it's a little power surge and it burns out the optical region of your brain. That would be uncool.
Shh! You're messing with the transhumanist movement.
Hey, you know, more power to them. If they want to do that, you know, great. And I kind of think, you know, maybe if they got it to that point in like 10 years where it was like, wow, you could switch to ultraviolet, infrared, X-ray, and you still have, you know, even better than perfect vision. Now, that might be something different there.
Well, that's hopefully the track they're getting on. Right now they can see black and white in flashes of light. That's about it. But eventually, maybe they'll get past 2020.
And then, it's fascinating stuff. For right now, I'd be content with just putting on some goggles or a helmet and walking around.
So easy.
Yeah.
Bumping into walls.
What happened to the bootstrapping way?
Yeah. Yeah, the do-it-your-home kit.
Yeah, bootstrap your mind.
That's it. You get a scalpel and you know, some wiring and needles and, I don't know.
And a lobotomy kit.
That's it. So you'd have to have, like, your kids or something do it for you.
That is such a weird idea. Hearing your girls and then just thinking of them digging into your brain now.
Yeah, that's it. Oops. That's what you don't want to hear. You don't want to hear a oops or they start fighting. No, not that one. Not that one. That's what's going to happen. Like, that's going to be the big thing, and that's a big problem in schools one day, is people performing self-wetware kits on one another. You know, they'll be sitting in, like, the instead of smoking in the bathroom, they'll be attaching camera eyes to each other in the bathroom.
No more Flav clocks. They're going to be right into their chest skin now.
That's it. Tattoos, piercings, all gone. Now it's all just electronic components. Would you put a Flavor Flav clock in your chest?
No.
It'd be connected to your heart. So every time it beats, it's like a second there.
No, but I would definitely put like a clock chip into my wrist. So like there would be just a little LCD thing in my wrist. That would be cool.
There you go. Oh, look who just popped in the IRC a little while ago and finally decided to make himself known.
It's Captain Obvious.
You know what the problem also is with the Linux version of Skype?
What?
From what I understand is, I'm not sure that you can add people to a conference once they've once you've started the conference. Oh, maybe
really?
You can. Maybe there's an invite.
Are you sure? Isn't there an invite button when you right-click on a person? I'm not sure.
Maybe it's better in a newer version. Yeah, I think we went through this a little while ago. Wetware. Anyway, Alien Arena 2006 is...
How did we get onto Wetware from Alien Arena?
Because we were talking about an immersed virtual reality first-person shooter game.
All right. Which will be done in OpenGL, of course.
Right. DirectX.
Would you trust DirectX in your mind?
Hell no. Oh, no way. Can you imagine that? Wow. Can you imagine if you're driving down the road and all of a sudden your eyes blue screened? That would suck. Wow.
Yeah.
That would be dangerous. I guess at that point we'll probably have vehicles that drive themselves. You just pop in the coordinates you want to go to and just kick back and play your first-person shooter game while your car drives you there.
But with you, you would be like recompiling your brain kernel all the time. You would have like kernel panics and the core would dump all the time in your brain.
Yeah, kernel panics. Oh. Boy, can you imagine that if you recompiled your optic kernel and you forgot a module?
It's like all of a sudden I can't see red.
Yeah. And then somebody puts in like a porn hack in there or something. And then everybody's just like, I don't know, everybody walking around looks like Ron Jeremy.
That would be creepy.
Yeah.
But then like chicks would have like Clooney. Clooney would be superimposed onto everybody.
Clooney?
George Clooney.
George Clooney?
He would be superimposed onto everybody.
Oh, I don't know, man.
See, when your wife sees you, she sees George Clooney?
Okay, I see what you're saying. But what if I looked at my wife and she looked like George Clooney? That'd be kind of scary.
Well, you can change it, man. The whole point.
But then, okay, so you change it and then everybody looks like, let's see. I don't know who. If we stick with the porn star, like Jenna Jameson, okay? Everybody looks like Jenna Jameson. Then you're in a room with your mom and your wife. Or your girlfriend.
Oh, my God.
And you don't know who is who.
Exceptions in there.
What's that?
Blacklist exceptions. Or whitelist, depending on how you think about it.
Oh, there you go. I don't know. There's so many possibilities. Let us know how it works out when you get those optical cameras put in.
All right, or we'll do.
And then, then you could do that, you could just... I guess you could then transmit what you see to other people, and they could, you could just, like, rent your life out.
But the thing is, if you've listened to stuff like Tales from the After Now, you know that Corpse will, like, all of a sudden say, well, you could record our intellectual property with your eyes. So all of a sudden they would have to put DRM into your eyes in order to allow you to see their intellectual property.
Or else it comes through as a blocked out thing. A big DRM.
Exactly. They need to DRM your vision, otherwise you could record this, because as you see it, it's obviously buffering it, thus that's a form of recording.
So, that sucks. That'd be pretty scary. I don't know. You know, when you start going down that route there, you're thinking about that, now they start blocking stuff out. What if somebody decides to, hack into a stoplight and make a DRM, and then nobody could see it? You just see a block, you never know what the stoplight is, whether it's red, green, or yellow.
And the same thing can go with your hearing. You say you get artificial ears, it's obviously recording the radio as you hear it, so now you have to DRM the radio and your ears.
And this is why the EFF are good people.
Be pretty scary stuff. And your nose then, too. Maybe we can put in electronic taste buds.
Well, have they copyrighted taste and smell yet?
No, that's it. Not yet, because they have no reason to, but... Well, I wonder, did they? I think, well, they copyright and patent perfume in other sense.
I think that's just the method of how you make the smell. I don't think it's the actual smell itself.
Well, if you... I'm not sure about that, because if you... Well, I'm not sure how the knockoff brands work. I mean, if they smell almost exactly the same, is that a violation of the...
No, I think they have to use the same process in order to make the smell. The smell is just the byproduct of the product itself.
Huh.
Because really all you're making is just a smelly liquid. They're explaining, they're copywriting how they made that smelly liquid.
Well then, you know what? Then you could probably, I don't know, I guess if you got to that point, they probably would try and patent stuff. Put a copyright on certain smells. Huh.
It's a scary, scary world.
Everything would be copyrighted.
Call your senators. And if you're in Canada, I'm not sure what you do. Do a no confidence vote. Again.
So maybe you would, if it all came down to it, and then you try and run Linux on your body, and because it doesn't support DRM technology, you'd, once you rebooted, everything would be black. You couldn't see anything. You couldn't hear anything. You couldn't taste anything. You'd be screwed.
You'd be screwed. You live in a catatonic state of mind.
But you wouldn't really be screwed because you couldn't feel anything either. They'd turn that off.
That's trippy.
That would copyright, I don't know, feelings. Copyright sex.
No, that's just wrong. Porn companies copywriting their moves.
That's it. You'd be like, well, no, forget it. That position ain't going to work. You'd reboot. Right in the
what
middle.
Has this show become?
I don't know. We've really deviated from the topics.
It's the transhumanist show.
And it's all because of Unreal Tournament 2007.
Exactly.
It has caused all these problems. Oh. All right, so we'll change the topic then. I'm sure it'll probably roll back to this again in the near future. But, Pekka, you trip on the funny boat, run some awards this past week and a half, yes?
The Pi Week competition ended, and we came first in the team category.
First, so what does that award give you? Fame? Fortune?
Yes, lots of fame.
And women?
Yeah, well, possibly. I haven't seen them yet.
They're making their way over there to Iceland as we speak now.
Iceland?
Wait. You're in Finland, I'm sorry. Finland.
Yeah.
Oh, that's why you didn't see them yet. They went to Iceland. Sorry about that.
Oh, yeah.
Now, when is PY Week 3 going to start up? Or Pi Week 3?
I think it's... in about 6 months, so.
In about 6 months. And I noticed that the PiWeek.org site is having some hosting issues. Did it get a little too popular?
Yeah, they're changing their hosts, I think. They had more traffic than they expected for PiWeek 2.
So now, Trip on...
Yep.
Trip on the Funny Boat, it's award... At Pi Week, you have released an updated version. Am I not mistaken?
Yeah, you're right. Although it's pretty much just a few trivial fixes, so nothing big. But we are working on an actual new version now.
And what? A new version of it?
Yeah, well, improving it.
What improvements do you have planned?
Well, currently, at least online high scores, and possibly some new enemies, that sort of thing.
That's neat. A submarine mode.
Perhaps.
Perhaps.
It's a neat idea, actually.
And a hovercraft mode. and it could go over land.
Those are actually good ideas. I'll have to think of those.
And a porn mode?
So it got to this again. Well,
or mod, sure. Maybe.
Yeah, well, someone can make that mod, so I guess it's the sirens are coming after your steamboat.
Be a good new meaning to trip on the funny boat. The trip on the funny bone. You know what? I was playing it. What was it? Was it last night or the night before? And my kids kept coming and yelling at me because they wanted something done, and I kept telling them, "No, you gotta wait. You gotta wait." Because I was trying to get to that end boss there, and I finally got to the Titanic guy, and he's pretty tough.
Yeah.
He is pretty tough. Because when you lose all those hearts, oof. Can you shoot the bird?
Yeah, you can.
Is that a seagull or an albatross?
It's a seagull.
Now, what you should do is you should make a seagull and an albatross. And if you shoot the seagull, I think I did shoot the seagull. You get a certain amount of points. But if you shoot the albatross, because that's bad luck, your boat sinks automatically.
Hmm. Oh. That'd be pretty mean. Maybe you just lost some scar or something.
And a whirlpool. You should throw a whirlpool in there that you have to jump over, but you have to hit the crest of the wave just right so you can get some distance. And if you miss, you sink right to the bottom.
There also should be an alien that comes down for some reason.
Bermuda Triangle mode.
Yeah, actually, that's one of the levels or kind of phases we're thinking of, although I don't know if it would be a bit too far out.
It can never be too far.
Well, actually, we were thinking of some giant parrots that would be that would have pirates riding them. So,
there you go. That could board the funny boat.
Yeah,
that is neat. Yeah, that's a good idea. And
I'll have to write this down.
Wow. Now, are you going to, with the stuff that you're looking at for the future of Trip on the Funny Boat, are you going to stay true to the concept of the Pi Week 2 of a Steam-based system or a Steam-based game?
Yeah, well, it's not really, the game doesn't really have much to do with the Steam. It's just a Steam boat. It could be any boat, I guess.
Right, but I mean, like, the concept of Pi week 2 was that it was a Steam based system, right? So
yeah.
So your future releases, you might not stick with that.
Well, I think we'll stick with that, but I don't think it's very important to the game. It's just kind of a setting.
Icebergs.
Yeah, perhaps. We were actually thinking that the Titanic would spawn some icebergs at you.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's not there yet, but
it will be next week.
Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah.
Perhaps it will be.
Well, I mean, you guys did that whole thing in 1 week. You you could have a completely, modded game in 2 or 3 days.
Yeah. I guess we could. I guess you can kind of spend 1 week full steam and kind of working the game nonstop. I don't know. After that, it's been a bit more quiet. But I hope we can get some good stuff next week.
It's definitely something to keep an eye on. I'll post the website for Trip on the Funny Boat. And that's simply funnyboat.sourceforge.net.
Yes.
You know what that needs? On that website is a link section to some of the other games that you have done, like Watermelons.
Yeah, maybe. That might be a good idea, I guess.
Does Watermelons... have you incorporated an online upload of the high score, of your score? Because I noticed that you do have a web high score and web recent scores listing on there. Is that people just post a screenshot?
No, it's actually automated.
Oh, it's automated.
Yeah, and you can actually cheat on it. So it's a not very safe system, but then again, it's pretty hard to make a safe system with an open source game.
Now, how? It's like I look over here and I see a listing here of SPA FB Nerf, whatever, however you pronounce that. You click on that link for him, and there's a choice to say real or fake. Is that the? Is that like the community comes in and says, no, that can't be a real score, and they hit fake?
Yeah, it's like that. Huh. It doesn't actually work very well, because some people tend to kind of go there and mock everybody fake or something.
My kids like that game.
Okay.
One of the nice things about it is it's not really that hard to learn how to play it.
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
But it's hard to get a high score on.
Yeah.
Now who?
It's,
did you code that? Did you code that? Yeah, you did the coding, and then
No, I actually filled it out a lot of the coding too. I did most of the kind of game logic.
Okay, is this the same team that did Trip on the Funny Boat?
No, it's a completely different team.
Oh, and it's a thriller
it's
game.
Just kind of a few people on the PyWeek IRC channel just. But that it would be a good idea to do a little game in a few hours.
That's a pretty fun game. All those games over there, a lot of them that I've played are fun. The one that won the first week, was it Dynamite?
Yeah, I think so.
Let me look at the actual name of that.
I think it was Dynamite with an exclamation mark.
Yeah, just Dynamite. I played through almost all the levels on that. That's a pretty fun. The only thing I don't like about those games on PyWeek or PyWeek is if they don't update them anymore, because it's just such a nice little, it's a nice little game that they have there. And if it's something like Trip on the Funny Boat or Dynamite, it's like you think about it and you say, "Wow, if you could just get more levels or more, you know, if they keep updating this, it's going to be great." But
yeah. It's a shame when people abandon the projects, but I guess that's actually pretty common in kind of the free software world, which is really a shame.
I got some really good stuff on there. Dun, dun, dun. And if you've been keeping an eye out on the Tux Games and Linux Game Tomb, there's some pretty interesting projects that have shown up on there.
Tux Games is your shop.
Yeah, no, not Tux Games. Linux Games.
Linux Games.
Yeah, that's Linux Games is where I saw the red.planet.org for Alien Arena 2006. But on Linux Game Tomb, there was an interesting looking game on there called Turbo Sliders, which I pulled down. It's by Jolly Good Games. And I've only played it for a few minutes and haven't gotten... I don't want to give too much of a review on it this show. But, it's something worth checking out. It's a commercial game, so it's $20, but you can pull down the demo, which has a couple of levels on there. It's a little racing game. Trying to think of what it reminds me of.
Slicks and Slide.
What?
Slicks and Slide.
Yeah, I think so. It's just got like a little track there, and you just race around the track. It looks pretty fun. The only complaint I've had with it is it changes, like when it brings it comes up in full screen, and it changes your screen resolution to match the screen resolution you have set for the sliders. And when you exit out of it, it doesn't set the screen resolution back properly for some reason. Or it hasn't on mine, and I need to look into that. But it was definitely an interesting game to play around with.
Does that have on online play?
Does it have online play? It says it has network play. But the demo, I don't believe, has network capability. You got to buy the shareware version. Shareware. Yeah. But it has sound, it plays in X, it's multiplayer, and network play. So if you're at all into some of those little racing games like that, maybe something cool to check out.
It's rare to see shareware games these days.
Yeah, it is. It's
most of the shareware guys kind of got into free software some point, so.
Now, what is actually, what is a shareware license? Is that from, like, you can download it and play it, but you're kind of on an honor system to pay for it?
I think they often are kind of give you a limited version, like a demo version.
Yeah, I guess that's what the shareware license means. But
yeah.
It's
sometimes they do give you a kind of full copy of it, and you just, it kind of just nags at you every time you use it.
Yeah. Well, here's what it says. By choosing to release this game as shareware, the author has decided that he wishes to gain more than a little recognition for his work. He'd like some money. Is there something wrong with this? Oh, no, that's not the official license. Yeah, okay. But that's what somebody was posting under the review. But it's something I'll be talking about in the near future. Fun stuff. Also, this week, on our forum, Judland, who had just recently picked up a GP2X, was touting a project called the Minigame Project that was put up on the 14th of April this year, I think. It's a collection of minigames for the GP2X. You fire these things up, and they're pretty fun. They're pretty addicting little games there. It runs beautifully on my GP2X. Games include a version where there's a little Mario dude where you have to jump on some enemies that keep coming out, and the goal of this little mini game is to jump in as many consecutive enemies as possible and get the highest score. Your game ends when you miss an enemy and get hit by them. There's a couple of shoot 'em up type things. There's a target game. There's games where you move stuff around, like a block around the screen, to capture other blocks of the same color without getting hit by the other objects on the screen. And as you grab a block, I think you start to increase in size for each one you eat. Just little mini game stuff like that. Really easy to play. Something to distract yourself for a few minutes. And there's about 1, 2, 3. I'd say about 20 games on there right now, 22 games, and I'm hoping that they put more together, and it's just fun. Definitely check it out. You can get it at gp32.com under the download sections for the GP2X, under games, freeware, miscellaneous games. I'll post a link directly to it on the Logger site, but if you have a GP2X, definitely check this game out. Very, very fun. For all ages. Two thumbs up.
Does it work on a desktop Linux box?
That's a good question. I don't know. You can get the source, and I'm sure you can compile the source for, because that's all the GP2X is a Linux-based system. But you know, the layout and the different what it looks for, and their STK has a little more differences than a basic Linux system. But I'm sure you could probably find this. I wonder if they have a listing of their homepage. I'm not sure, but I think you could probably get the source for it. There's chances are there is a mini game project for Linux out there already. I'll put that into a web browser. I'll put that into a search and see if I can find anything. I don't know. I'll look into that there. You're not supposed to ask complicated questions like that that we don't have an answer for. Anything else you guys want to talk about before I go into some game reviews?
No.
Do you want to, well, I'd originally emailed some suggestions for game reviews, going with a concept of infestation or infection, but Jesse, you had said something about talking about Frozen Bubble.
Oh yeah, Frozen Bubble.
Why don't you go ahead and bring that up before I talk about the other games I was going to talk about.
I also got to talk about Adam.
Oh yeah, anyway. Alright, go ahead.
Frozen Bubble. For those of you who played Bubble Bobble, yeah, the game by Tomiko or some company, you know, where you shoot the balls up and you gotta match like three same colored balls and then explode, then the balls that are attached to them sometimes fall to the ground, and it's a rather simple arcade game. It's been around forever, like since before the Super Nintendo, around the Nintendo era, at least in the arcades.
Yeah, you can find that in, like, the bar rooms game stuff too, where you have that multi-game screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Frozen Bubble is pretty much a clone of that. It's a rather nice clone. Nice cartoony graphics, similar to the ones you would find in Bubble Bobble. There's not that much different from it, although I do have one complaint, and I'm not sure if it's just me or my mixer or whatever, but the sound effects in it, they have this weird, really high-pitched tone which rattles my ears. Specifically when the balls clink together, it has this weird clink sound that hurts, and it makes me cry.
Do you play it with headphones on?
Yes, I do.
I don't know, I have to try it with headphones on sometime. I've never really noticed that, but I think I do remember the clinking noise you're talking about. It didn't affect me as much.
All right, so that's a pretty simple review, because if you play Bubble Bobble, you'll know what this is. On to Adam.
Wait a second. I want to make a mention of something about Frozen Bubble.
Sure.
That game is a time burner, because you could while away good 2 or 3 hours playing that and not even realize it.
Yes. Yes, you could. Think about Tetris, and then you'll realize.
Yeah, that is a fun game.
You know what's, you know what fucks me about Frozen Bubble?
What?
It has no save game option.
But it's like one of those games where you just need a high score. Oh.
Yeah, but you always have to kind of start on the easy levels.
I see.
There's no level select?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
All right.
I'm pretty sure there isn't.
Frozen Bubble guys, put in a level select.
Well, they haven't kind of been developing it since 2003.
So it's stagnant right now?
You know what? Let me bring up Frozen Bubble, look at that, and see if there is a level select. I turn off the sound. Hold on. Level editor. Start game. High score. No, I don't see a level select on there.
If you type Frozen Bubble into Google, the first thing that comes up is like a Java web browser version of it. So
there's been a bunch of different, I think, knockoffs released of that. I know there's one for the GP2X, but I don't know. Has Frozen Bubble become stagnant? Where else can you take it though?
Well,
I don't know.
I see something about that. Is that network playable? Network play?
I think so.
Start 2-player game. No, it's not. I don't see any way of hooking up to a network. Now, that would be cool, to be able to do Frozen Bubble Network.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's all sorts of stuff that you could improve in Frozen Bubble, I think. Like, currently it's basically just popping those bubbles. So I guess they could add something like some power-ups or whatever, some bombs or something like that. So to spice it up a bit.
Huh. Be interesting to see. I'm going to go over to the Frozen Bubble website.
Check out the first link under Google. It's like Frozen Bubble perfectly remade in Java. For your browser. It's pretty.
It must be a kind of big project to audit this way. I wonder why anyone has bothered to do that. I guess they just basically use the graphics.
Does anyone know what libraries it uses? Is it like
The Frozen Bubble itself?
Yeah.
It uses SDL and I believe Perl SDL. Or SDL
yeah,
Perl.
Perl. Yeah. I don't think it uses anything else on SDL. It's written in Perl. Which is quite unusual for a game, actually. Do you know any other games that are written in Perl?
In Perl?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, you're right. The Frozen Bubble Java version works almost essentially like the original one. So if you don't have it installed and you have Java, you could just head on over there with a Java-enabled browser and play it. I just checked it out on, what is that,
It's some weird free French site.
I'll make sure I add that to the notes and publicize that site right there. Interesting.
But there's also a flash port.
There's a flash port too?
Yeah.
What's the website for that? Or you could just post it in the IRC. How's the flash one work? Does it work pretty good?
I have no idea.
But yeah, Frozen Bubble, main website, frozen-bubble.org. Let's see. Last news was on 2005 about a compliant website. I don't know. I don't know if there's been any development on that.
I don't think there has.
Is that on SourceForge?
No, just frozen-bubble.org. It's possible that the files are stored on SourceForge. It requires Perl, SDL, SDL Image, SDL Mixer, and Perl SDL.
Well, it's nice and compliant.
There's a bunch of binaries. It's cross-platform, too. I've run it in OS X, and I know it runs on Windows, too. They have ports for the Yopi, Series 60 Symbian module phones.
They have it on phones now?
Yeah, Series 60 Symbian.
Of course.
I don't know.
It's a fun game. Definitely a fun game. Check it out.
Yeah.
That's probably one of the more popular games.
It is.
Did you ever play Crack Attack?
No.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
I have played it.
That's another addicting game.
Yeah, it's like crack.
Yeah, it is.
Is it like crack?
Well, what you do is you run out of your house, you go down to the nearest crack house with a lead pipe and a lighter, and you get as much crack as you can, any way that you can, and you escape out of there before the bouncer comes in and kicks your ass.
Crack houses have bouncers now?
The dudes that stand out front. I don't know. What do you call those guys?
Drug dealers?
Yeah, well, I guess. But usually they have, some muscle. I don't know. You know what? I don't know. I've never been to a crack house before. I was just trying to make something up on the fly.
Okay. So we're
the bouncers at the drug house.
I don't know. Every time you see it in a movie, they go to a crack house. There's always some burly-looking guy standing out there and, who doesn't seem to care who the heck goes in and out of there just as long as, you know, the crack still flows.
Yeah, that's called the drug dealer.
Yeah. Well, he's a drug dealer? All right. I just figured they'd have some kind of protection there for the drug dealer.
Yeah, it's called the gun.
Yeah. All right. So you got to take a pipe and a lighter down there and get all the crack you can before the dealer comes in and caps your ass. That's called Dope
awesome.
Wars. Yeah, Dope Wars.
Dope Wars is awesome.
Yeah, that is a great game. But we'll cover Crack Attack and Dope Wars in another game. In our special chemical episode.
Special chemical episode.
Yes. That's where we'll also cover the original version of Tripping on the Funny Boat.
Yeah.
The inspiration for Trip on the Funny Boat. How it was created.
And as always, we need that just dropped in song.
I love that song.
That's it. So what's the other thing?
Oh yeah, Adam.
Adam.
Adam. Ancient Domains of Mystery. What is that?
Good question. What is it?
Someone's sound is coming in through the mixer.
Is it still happening?
Yeah, I'm hearing the sounds for that game. Frozen Bubble.
Wait a minute. It's not my system.
I'm not hearing anything.
I turned off Frozen Bubble. You still hearing
are
it?
Are you playing, not now, but I was.
Yeah, no. I you know what? I did have both the regular version and the online version up about 5 minutes ago, but I don't think it should still be playing through.
All right, anyways. Mm. I heard it just a bit ago. Anyway, never mind. Since you didn't hear anything, it doesn't go onto the recording, and thus it is fine. Back to Ancient Domains of Mystery. Dun, 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 dun. I'm hearing it again now. Oh, wait, no, that's me. That's my computer.
Yeah, good show there.
I was wondering what the hell was going on, and I realized, wait, that's my computer. It's nothing to do with the recording. Okay. Ancient Domains of Mystery. I will do it this time. It is a roguelike game. And for those who do not know what roguelike games are, it's isometric, and it's represented by ASCII characters. Very high-tech stuff.
Now, this is like a NetHack, right?
Yeah, exactly like
that.
It's
another... Okay.
Except for it's a lot more advanced.
Uh-huh. Like
it's more quest-oriented rather than just randomly killing mobs-oriented.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of randomly killing mobs in this thing, but you can actually, like, talk to NPCs and then kill them. And then talk to more of them. It's very high-tech. It involves soft shadowing and per-pixel lighting and DirectX 9. No, it doesn't.
DirectX 9.
You need a terminal, and it works in pretty much any operating system with a terminal. And you basically start out as an at symbol, which represents you, and you walk around, and then you walk into things and kill them, and then take their body and eat them. It's a lot more advanced than that, actually. It's rather complex. Like, there's like a dozen and a half races and over a dozen classes, and you can be male or female, and you get all these stats and perks. It's far more advanced than NetHack, where you just pick your race and class. This has, like, perks and traits and stats, and you walk around, and you level up, and you get magic spells, and you get scrolls, and you can buy stuff from vendors, and you, like, walk around, and then kill people. Did I mention the killing?
Yeah, and eating them, too.
Yeah, you can pick up their corpses, because you need to eat in this game, so you're often eating, like, dog corpses.
Tasty.
And if you're like a troll, you can eat bones. You can be a troll in this game. Because the race also defines how much you need to eat and what you can eat. Like, if you're a human, you can't eat rotten stuff or get sick. But if you're like an org or something, you can eat anything.
And you say that this actually has quests in it?
Yeah. Like, you go into a town and you talk to, like, the guy, and he's like, hey, would you like to help us? We need your help. Alternatively, you can just attack him and kill him.
And then eat him.
And then eat him. And,
does the game punish you from cannibalism?
There's a lot of cannibalism. In fact, there's an enemy called the Doppelganger, and he's basically you. But when you try to eat the Doppelganger, it says you cannot bring yourself to eat yourself. Because essentially you would have to eat yourself in order to eat the doppelganger.
And
but
this
ogre can't eat himself either.
And this version, the version that you're playing, is it's just all ASCII?
Yeah, there is no like NetHack version where there's, you know, it's actual characters.
Okay.
It's always ASCII.
Always ASCII.
The one thing is that it's not FOSS. It is free, but it's not OSS.
Yes, right.
And it's done in, like, QBasic.
Okay.
So trippy.
So it means it's freeware, but it's not free software.
No, it's postcardware.
And
oh, postcardware.
It's
postcardware.
In order to register the game, which is not necessary, you have to send him a postcard.
Now, can you actually look at the source of this?
No, there is no source.
Yeah, right.
It says in the facts, it's closed source. No one has the source code except for me.
That me being the developer, not you.
Yeah. I don't program in whatever. I think it's QHack, QBasic, some weird language.
How difficult is it to get into that to this type of game, do you think?
Well, the problem with this game is that it's far more complicated than NetHack, so you have to have this huge manual that explains, like, 100 commands. Because there's, like, commands all the way from, obviously, killing things and kicking down doors to wiping your face. Because, like, I suppose there's one instance in the game where you get slime on your face and you have to wipe it off.
Oh, man.
The other thing about this game that you should be wary about is that there's no... There's save games, but once you die, your save game becomes corrupted. It corrupts your save game, so whenever you die in this game, you have to start over. Unless you manually copy the save game before you die.
Wasn't that a common problem with NetHack too?
Well, it's not a problem. It's designed to be that way where there's permadeath.
Oh, permadeath. Okay. Because I remember playing the Falcon's Eye port of NetHack where they did the 3D isometric view on top of NetHack, and if you died, you would lose your game, your save game. You actually had to copy the save game out of the original location. And
that's cheating.
Yeah, course.
That's the cheating part. You're not supposed to do that. It's supposed to be permadeath.
In this game, do you have a little familiar or pet that runs around with you?
No, not like in NetHack, but I haven't played mage characters a lot, but there might be some conjuration spells where you can like conjure up a whatever.
Because I've always wondered about that in NetHack. What the hell to do with that little animal thing?
I have no idea.
And it always ends up getting killed, or I end up killing it by running into it. And then I don't know, you know. I'm like, well, the hell with that. And then you can eat them, I guess.
You can eat them. It's the whole point of the game, to eat things that you kill.
Now, is there anything that you can eat, that you eat, that kills you for eating it?
Yeah, rotten food.
There's poisonous stuff.
Yeah, like... The thing about this game is that when you pick up stuff from monsters, you have no idea what it is. So, for example, if you put on armor that you picked up, there's a good chance it's cursed and you won't be able to ever take it off unless you, like, go to, like, a shrine and pray to some god in the game or something, which uncurses it. Or, like, if you just drink a random potion, there's a good chance it's going to poison you and kill you.
Uh-huh.
So it's, like, a really hardcore game where... Everything's going to kill you, and there's no save games.
Yeah. Now, I'm looking on their website. There's four different versions. Have you tried the other two? I mean, one of them is a pen and pencil, traditional role-playing game.
Pen and pencil?
Yeah.
No, I think he's just advertising Dungeons & Dragons on there.
No, he's tired of spending endless hours in front of the computer, ADM. His roots in a pen and paper, a role-playing game, now getting back to its roots. The ADOM RPG diary. Well, maybe it is. I don't know. But there's Atom Deluxe, and then there's Jade.
What? I'm confused now.
Jade is based on Java technology. It's a glimpse of what's to come in the next generation of ADOM. I've been on the Atom website before a long time ago, and it looks like the same information that was up there before is up there now. Then there's the Atom Deluxe, which is a commercial version of the game.
Did that ever work out? I remember hearing about that, but I remember hearing that like it just went into like vapor.
You know, I think it did, because the last thing that he has on here in the diary is from February 27th, 1999.
Yeah, the Deluxe version just became vaporware, basically.
Uh-huh.
Whereas he's still doing active development on regular Atom. And I lied, it's not for everything because it's not open source, but it's for Linux, for DOS, and I suppose that by Linux it also means, like, BSD, too. There's DOS, there's Windows, which... It doesn't actually render in DOS, like the DOS version. It makes its own widget and then does the DOS stuff within its own widget. So it's like a terminal in itself.
Ah.
And then there's a Macintosh version.
Yep, I see that there. All available from the website. Hours of fun, right?
Hours and hours of ASCII character fun.
So something that you'd throw your Xbox or PlayStation or GameCube right out the window so you could devote your time to playing this.
Exactly. It is that awesome. You'll be like, why did I ever like soft shadowing? All I need is ASCII characters. I think a lowercase d perfectly represents a dog.
Have you finished a quest?
No. I end up just killing that guy and then just killing things until I die to see how high level I can get.
What's the highest you've gotten to?
like level 20, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So when creatures get tougher, are they represented by capital letters?
No, they're
not. It's not based on their level, but like an uppercase B always represents a bat, and a lowercase D always represents like a dog or a wolf or something.
So how do they, like, what's a giant bat then? Did you come across
an uppercase B?
I thought the uppercase B was a bat.
Yeah, it's just it's all a bat.
They're all bats.
They're all bats.
It has colors for different kinds of bats and dogs.
Does it use color?
Yeah, it does.
Because I see that they're billing it as like something over 400 monsters, 600 items, cool stuff. What character class do you usually play?
I play the non-mage types because early in the game, all the mages like die. Like apparently they get really good at the end, but at the start they just die. Because you can only cast, like, one spell, and you only can cast it once, and whenever you get close to a monster, they, like, kill you. So I end up playing stuff like a Beastmaster or a Barbarian.
Do you ever play Crossfire?
Sounds familiar.
It's kind of on the similar lines, but it's graphical, actually. Not complex graphics, but it's graphical.
Is it still a kind of a roguelike or like on the old
Ultima games? Yeah, I haven't played it in a while, and I'm not sure if there's actual quests in it, but it's very similar to NetHack though too. When you run around, you collect weapons, you level up, you generate your character in the beginning, but the only difference is it's not ASCII based. It actually has like little tiles that represent, you know, different characters and different monsters. And, you know, you got, like, rivers, and it's both above ground and below ground type stuff.
Is it actually a multiplayer game?
Yeah, you run a Crossfire server, which allows it to be multiplayer, and you connect to it. It's kind of like FreeCiv is. If you want to run FreeCiv, you got to run the server and then a client portion. Crossfire has a server and a client portion. And you could play it single player. But you could also, you know, have a little world going on, too, where multiple people connect. I've never played it multiplayer.
Yeah, okay. I'm just wondering if there are any kind of public servers for it.
I'm sure there are, but I haven't... Like I said, I haven't played Crossfire in a couple years now.
Yeah.
There used to be there used to be a Crossfire server running over here, but it's been a while since that's been up, too.
There's a meta server on the website, so there are... There are a few active servers here. One of them has 32 players, actually.
That's an older game. All right. Anything else you want to say about Adam?
I want to ask one thing. Is there... what's the kind of main quest in the game? Or is there a plot?
Apparently there is a plot, but it's all like... It's a plot to gain access to the domains of the ancients, right? It's really cheesy. It's not like Deus Ex where it's like this conspiracy. It's like, you're a hero. You have to go to this dungeon and kill this evil man.
Yeah. Like in NetHack, it's just you have to get the amulet of Yendor for your god.
Yeah.
And then you do all sorts of stuff. It has nothing to do with the amulet.
So there might be a main storyline, but it's, you know, it's not going to arc or anything. It's just going to be like, save us. You are our champion.
So definitely a game to check out. You recommend it?
Yeah. If you got some time to burn, just go into it. You got to keep the manual nearby because you have no idea what all the commands are at first, but you'll get used to it eventually.
And that's Adam, Ancient Domains of Mystery. And you'll have hours of fun.
Hours of ASCII character fun.
Hurrah. All right. I have a couple of games. Maybe you guys have played this. The first up I'm going to talk about is Virus Killer. Have you guys seen this? It's from Parallel Realities.
Nope.
Nope.
And
I said the same people who did the Blob Wars game.
Yep, did Blob Wars. Virus Killer is a pretty fun game. It's really simple. Basically what it is when you start it up, it catalogs your home directory. For the purposes of generating the files and the folders and directories on the screen. And what you have is you have a desktop that comes up. And at this point right now, it looks like an OS X desktop. And you have a couple of directories laying around on the desktop. And then from the corners of the screen or from the sides of the screen, all these little vari come running out. Different shapes, different types do different things. And they try and get into the directories and pull the files out and run off to the edge of the screen with them. And if they make it to the edge of the screen, you lose those. If they go in and take all the files out of a directory, the directory explodes. So the object of the game is to shoot the viruses that come out before they get into the directories. And they come out in like a mob at some as you get up into the higher levels. And it's kind of like you have a little crosshair on the screen, and when you press the fire button, little lasers shoot out of the side and into the crosshairs. Now, if you hold in the button, the laser keeps firing. So the idea of this game is you move the crosshair around and you try and hit as many with holding into the fire button as possible to create chains of the virus that you destroy. But the hard part is at the top of the screen you have what's called kernel power. And every time you fire, the kernel power goes down by a little bit. So as you hold in the mouse button to fire, your kernel power starts to go down. And the only way you can, there's two ways you can replenish your kernel power. One is to just not fire, and it'll just start to go up by itself. But there's also little batteries that appear that pop up on the screen. If you hit that, it automatically replenishes your kernel power. So it's a pretty fun game to check out by Parallel Realities. The object, of course, is to make sure that you don't lose any of your directories or files. As you gain levels, if you haven't lost any directories or files, they'll add another one. And all your directories and files that are on the screen are the ones that it pulls out of your home directory. So
and
you don't
you lose them.
Yeah.
RMFs them. RMFR.
Yeah. No, it doesn't do that. It just kind of makes it a little more, you know, genuine to your system. So it's a pretty cool feature they had in there. But that would be cool if you permanently, you could have a setting on there that would permanently nix your files if the virus got a hold of them.
Yeah, the RMFR mode.
Was that Pekua?
Yeah, wasn't there a kind of a Doom clone where you had all your files in there? So in the kind of a Doom map, and then if you shot a file, it actually deleted the file.
I heard something about that. Was it actually a Doom thing, or was it more like a file manager that they tried to make look like Doom?
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Because there's a file manager called, it's you could actually fly through your files in a 3D space kind of thing.
That's cool.
It's is it X-Browse or something like that?
I think I've used it, but I don't remember the name.
Because that would totally be my file manager.
I think it was more of a proof of concept as much as a practical file manager. I'm not sure if you could actually do anything other than look at the files and the directories they're in. What was that?
Imagine if you had like a bunch of porn in your home directory. Would porn be everywhere as you try to save it?
You mean in a virus? Well, yeah, but you see your little porn files go running out, your porn pitman. they come in and steal those.
No.
Yeah.
Save the porn.
Damn, I can't remember what that actual... I'll have to look that up, because it's going to hit me right when we're done with this. It'll definitely hit me, but I will look that up. That was a pretty cool file browser. Alright, so Virus Killer, real easy game to install, play from Parallel Realities. Definitely pretty cool. Check it out. The other game I had is Pathogen. Have either of you played Pathogen Warrior?
No.
Okay, Pathogen Warrior, basically what it is you're given a 3D model of a pathogen that you have to reconstruct using 2D tiles. And as you start out, the pathogens have circular balls, like spheres of different colors connected to one another by these like little tubes in the 3D representation. And what you have to do is replicate that over there on your screen, on your tiles. And when you do that, you successfully replicate the pathogen and you eradicate it. And you start off basically like the first one is just two spheres of a different color connected with a tube. And that one's pretty easy to build. But then as it progresses in the game, you get more complex 3D models where they have multiple connections going between different spheres, and you have to replicate that on the 2D tile set. All the while, you have a time limit on doing this for each pathogen, and it becomes pretty difficult. It's a puzzle type game, but you can, as the pathogen comes up, you can rotate it in 360 degrees to look at it, so that you can get a better feel of how to reconstruct the pathogen. It's a challenging game. It's really fun. The music's pretty cool too. The graphics are, I think, pretty decent for that style of game, for that style of puzzle game. Definitely worth a look at. It'll give you a few hours of play there as you try and get up to the higher levels. It becomes difficult sometimes to look at where the actual connections are between some of them, because the way that the pathogen's twisted around, it gets pretty complex. So I definitely, for a quick diversion or something like that, give it a shot. It's another game, kind of like Frozen Bubble, where you can't start at a specific level, though. You actually have to build your way up. That's the challenge of it, to build your way up. And as you defeat a pathogen, they got a little map of the world down below, which shows you what country in the world that the pathogen's attacking. So it adds a little, coolness to that by showing you where the pathogen's located in the world. And when you beat it, it's like, oh, you've saved that section of the world. So definitely something to play around with. And I guess the final game I'll talk about tonight is Deadly Rooms of Death. Have you guys tried that one yet? No.
I actually have tried that one.
Actually, no, I got two more. But Deadly Rooms of Death. I reviewed this, I think, on the tech show a few weeks back, but in a nutshell, what it is you're a little dude with a sword, and the object of this is to go through the different rooms in this castle, and I think you're supposed to rescue the princess or something, but each level of the castle has a number of rooms in there, and the object is to get to the stairs, and the only way you can get to the stairs is by unlocking the doors through going through these rooms. And different patterns in these rooms. And each room has a unique puzzle challenge in it where you have to destroy all the creatures in that room. Each creature will come at you in a different style of movement. And you have to be careful because if they swarm at you, you can only hit one creature at a time. So every time you make a move, they get to make a move also. So the object of the game is to kill them all without you getting hit. So if your character gets hit, you die, and you have to restart that whole room all over again. And they throw different things in there, like there's certain doorways that you can only go through in one direction. There's switches that you have to hit to open up other doorways or to remove walls. It's a pretty complicated game as you get up into the higher levels, that each room then becomes, the harder rooms, there's only, like, one pattern that you could use to defeat it, to beat that room. So it's pretty challenging. The graphics are pretty cool. You got a little representation of your guy down at the bottom with this huge-ass nose. He's kind of ogre-ish looking, but it's a fun game. Did you have any comments about that, Pekka?
No, I don't think I have very much comments on that. Been a while since I've played that game.
Yeah, it's all the links for these games will be up on the website, but they're pretty fun. Deadly Rooms of Death. That's another game that you can end up spending hours in. And what's cool about it is you can just close the game, and when you start it back up again, you're going to pick up right where you left off. So that's pretty nice. It's a save game, obviously, in the future. So if you wanted to restore a game from a previous position, you could do that too. And I also think that there's a level editor if you want to create your own levels. But there's a bunch of them that you actually have to play through first. They're pretty complicated. Finally, I want to finish up with another game on the Infestation track. It's called Liquid War. Have either of you played Liquid War?
I've played a ton of that.
This Liquid War is a really odd game. It's pretty unique. And they're actually working on a Liquid War 2, but it's only in alpha stages right now. What Liquid War is you start off on opposite ends of a playing field between your opponent. Now, your opponent could be the computer set at a specific difficulty level, or you could actually play network-based games through their network servers online. And there's a number of them out there. But basically what you do is it's a two-player game, or one- or two-player game, and you have a certain amount of liquid on your side, and the opponent has a certain amount of liquid on their side, and I think usually default is there's a red and a green. And what you do is you run through this, like, maze of the field, and depending on the level that you set the maze for, it might be just like a couple of walls around. They're not really walls. It's almost like you're inside somebody's intestines or something. But there's like a couple of corners and stuff to where it's a really intricate mesh of walls and blocks and stuff like that. You can set it for the level, any specific level that you want. It gets really intricate. Well, anyway, the object of the game is you're supposed to take your liquid and infest your opponent with it and absorb your opponent's liquid so that the only thing that's left is you in the game. And you do this by taking using your mouse to flow your liquid through the maze into your opponent's liquid and surrounding his. So as you surround your opponent's liquid or different parts of your opponent, your liquid starts to infest his and eat away at his system and converts his into yours. And as you move your mouse, the cursor over and around and start flowing more of your liquid into that section, you'll absorb your opponent a lot faster. And the object is to kind of surround your opponent with your liquid and convert him into you until there's nothing left. It's kind of hard to describe. It's something you actually have to see for yourself. Like I said, it's a really interesting and unique game, and it's kind of fun to play. Did you have any opinions on that, Pekka?
Well, I think it's a really great game. I don't know. I just can't say really enough about that. So it's basically just a really innovative concept and a great game.
Yeah, it's pretty unique, and it's something to check out. It's not the greatest game in the world. It does have some replay limitation after if you're just doing a single level, single player games. But for a complete challenge, you want
to. It's a lot more fun in multiplayer.
Yeah, you'll definitely want to check it out in multiplayer. Zayfan, no?
I'm here.
No Liquid War for you yet?
No Liquid War.
Well, you're running Arch over there, right?
Arch, yeah.
Pac-Man, SY, Liquid War.
Soon, right now. Did you guys know that Flash 9 is coming out?
I thought they just released Flash 8.
Flash 8.5 Beta is being renamed to Flash 9.
Now, is that... for what operating system are you talking about? Because Flash 8 is not out for Linux. They said they were going to put out for 8.5 was going to be for Linux.
I'm just reading Gig, and it just says they're renaming Flash 8.5 Beta to 9. So don't expect 8.5 to come up for Linux. It'll just be 9, probably.
And that pisses me off.
Why?
Why? Because there's my kids use Ubuntu down there, and there's more and more sites that are moving over to Flash 8, and they don't run under Linux because there's no Flash 8 yet. They're not really.
I don't think there will be. But what's the problem if Flash 9 is going to be on Linux?
Right, but they said that they weren't going to release a version of Flash 8 until 8.5.
Yeah.
And, that stinks. Because if you're not going to release the source code that people can't compile it themselves, why delay? What's the reason of delaying the release of Flash for Linux? That's what I ask you, Jesse. What's the reason?
The reason, I think, is that the manpower over there seems to be limited, especially with the merger of Macromedia and Adobe. Thus, because of the merger, they are limited in manpower for some weird reason, and thus they need to concentrate their manpower on the Windows version because they consider 8 to be subpar, and thus they want to upgrade it to 8.5, or now known as 9. Is that enough business talk?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying there. I don't like it, but I understand what you're saying.
That is my answer. And so you guys know, don't wait for 8.5, because 8.5 is now known as 9.
So I got to keep an eye out. When do they suspect that that's going to be out?
I have have no idea. But apparently the beta's out, because they said 8.5 beta is now known as 9.
Ah.
That's not out for Linux.
Is that a public beta or a closed beta?
I don't know. I'd have to actually go look, and I haven't looked in a while. Bastards. Oh, speaking of that files manager, or that file system, it was originally called X-Cruise, and now it's called X-Cruiser. It's a file system virtuality utility. It constructs a virtually 3D formed universe from a directory tree and allows you to cruise within the virtualized file system. I don't think it has the capability of deleting anything by firing at it. But it's pretty new. It's pretty cool. Directories are represented by galaxies. Files are represented by planets. And then symbolic links are represented by wormholes. I think that's a new one that's added.
Wow. This is pretty cool. It's like you're in a spaceship.
Yeah, it's xcruiser.sourceforge.net. It's pretty fun.
Current galaxy / dev.
Yeah, I'm trying to... they don't have a Pac-Man package for it. An Arch Linux package for it yet. It's odd.
Do you ever make packages, or do you just install the source?
Usually what I've been doing, if I install something by source, I'll make the package for it. Because it's not that hard.
I haven't done that yet.
It's pretty easy to do.
Have you ever tried publishing it?
No.
The package?
No, because I don't think the packages I make, I haven't invested the time to actually do it the proper way. I just do it enough so that I need to, you know, it installs for me and I can manage it myself. It's not hard to do, though. I mean, about the hardest thing to do is figuring out what the actual dependencies are and putting that into the package, you know, into the file to create the package. All it is just a package build file. And it's pretty similar to Slackware, the way Slackware does it, but Slackware doesn't include dependency checking.
I'll have to try it sometime, because I've been just compiling and, you know, installing it.
Yeah, the easiest way to do this, I think, you know, if you're interested in doing it, like, is essentially go over, there's some documentation on doing it, but if you go over, like, to the Arch user repository and you click on any one of those packages in there, there's a package build file that you could just download and take a look at that and use it for your own personal use. Just edit it and change it. And essentially what you need to know is the download location and for that file in the world, wherever, you know, on the World Wide Web, and it'll and edit the build file for it, the build section, which essentially is, it tells it to extract that file and then run configure make install, or configure make, and it'll build the package for you. It's pretty easy. You're smart enough to figure it out.
Yeah, it sounds pretty easy. I'll have to do that, because I mean, like, there's some apps that don't do that, like Eltris.
Right.
Why is there no Eltris? And there should be an Eltris package.
If I'm not mistaken, there is one.
There is?
LTRIS? Yeah, it's over in the Arch Linux users repository. Arch user repository.
Must have missed that.
And, now, see, here's where I am with the Arch user repository. Is I didn't spend any time trying to figure out how to do this. Essentially, what I always do is I'll go over to the Arch user repository, find the package I want, pull down the package build file, and make it myself. Which essentially, you know, I put it into the directory on its own, and then I type in make package, and the build file already has all the information in it. It pulls down the source and builds it for you.
Nice.
That's how easy it is.
So are you using... Is Arch, do you think, a possible replacement for your Slackware usage? Is that going to replace your signature and your email? You know, get Arch, get happy.
I don't know. That's a tough one.
Because it is pretty minimal. Like, you can't say, oh, Slackware, it's really, really minimal. Well, Arch is too.
Yeah. I don't know. I like them both. I mean, they have different targets, different uses. I mean, so far, probably the difference between Slackware and Arch, I think, is stability. And, I haven't had too many problems with Arch. I mean, sometimes when you install, like, if you keep up with the updating and everything, something might break. You don't usually have that kind of problem with Slackware, if you stay with the standard Slackware stuff.
Yeah, but then, like, on Debian, you got to wait, like, 2 years before the version updates.
Right, you know. So it's got its pros and cons. I don't know, man. It's tough to say because it's really really hard. I like Arch a lot. I guess the only other complaint I have is the other thing I was talking about with earlier with Slack, where I wrote a post on my blog about it, is as more and more software is getting developed by third-party companies, be it some of it commercial or whatever, it's getting a lot more difficult to install certain packages that I would like to have on Slackware because of all the complex dependencies and different libraries and stuff that they're using for these packages. Case in point was iFolder, which I wanted to check out just to test it out. And it was such a monster to try and install from source. But then they have, like, the RPMs for SUSE and Debian's packages for Ubuntu. And then, of course, the Yahoos over there at Arch had already built iFolder for Arch. But, you know, there's nothing for that for Slackware. And I would suspect we won't see anything like that for Slackware for a while. You know what I'm saying?
All right, yeah, yeah.
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 I'm happy with Arch. Before I was on Arch, I was on Linux, on Gentoo, and I didn't like the compiling. And Arch is like Gentoo without the compiling.
Uh-huh.
So that's why I like it.
It's not a big...
Although you got to admit, the Gentoo website has some awesome documentation just for Linux in general. Like, you go onto the wiki and you can find stuff for even if you're not on Gentoo.
Yeah, the Gentoo documentation is top-notch. But unfortunately, we're getting off topic from Linux games here, because now I just installed Xcruiser from the Arch user repositories, and it's everything that it used to be. Have you put that on? You're not running on Arch right now, are you?
No, not right now.
Yeah, so
I've got to fix my microphone.
What I'm excited to try and find is something that's a symlink. But I gotta find my Etsy directory. I know there's an.
You got like the GLX and stuff working right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so is it taking advantage of that, or just using the base non 3D accelerator?
I think it's using base non 3D acceleration stuff. I don't think it's required that you have GLX. I remember running this a long time ago. I mean, it's a pretty old package. Pretty old package. Anything else you want to talk about or share before we close up?
No, I'm good.
All right, well. Anything you want to say, Pekka?
Nope.
All right, well, I want to thank you guys for coming on today. Thank everybody out there for listening. We'll be back again next week. That wraps up another episode of Logger. Thank you very much for listening. Remember, Logger is released under Creative Commons for non-commercial use license. Feel free to copy, excerpt from, or distribute Logger for non-commercial purposes. The opening music of the show is provided by James Underberg, called The Battle, with sound effects from Blob Wars by Parallel Realities. We'll see you next time.